Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Monday morning, August the 10th, 2026. 15 minutes past the hour. Glad to be with you. Do want to do another little bit of housekeeping at the top of this hour, as we did last hour. I was very sorry to learn yesterday of the passing of actor and politician Ben Jones at the age of 84. Now, you might not remember that name very well, but Ben Jones portrayed Cooter Davenport on the hit TV series The Dukes of Hazzard, and that was popular with a whole generation of children and adults and so on and so forth. As a matter of fact, I believe there was a story about when The Dukes of Hazzard was on in the late 70s, early 80s, there were places in the South, because The Dukes of Hazzard were on Friday night, there were places in the South that the football games were moved to Saturday. The high school football games were moved to Saturday because the attendance was down, because so many people were watching The Dukes of Hazzard. And Ben Jones, of course, played Cooter. He was the mechanic that lived in Hazzard County. He was on the series for the entire, I believe, 7-year run that it was on. There were also two reunion movies. I believe both movies were in the late 90s. He was a part of those. And he ran a little shop. I believe it was in the South somewhere that celebrated the Dukes of Hazzard. Now, what you might not know about Ben Jones is that he went on to get into politics. He became a congressman from Georgia. And just an interesting man who led an interesting life. He died yesterday at the age of 84, but he was on this program May the 8th, 2018. So over 8 years ago. Amazing to think that it's been 8 years since he's been on. But I had him on in 2018, May the 8th, 2018, and I wanted to play a clip this morning of Ben on during that appearance, talking about the Dukes of Hazzard reunion movies, and also talking about how he got into politics. So here's Ben Jones on this program, May the 8th, 2018.
The series comes to an end in 1985, and then a reunion movie, I believe late 90s, happens.
Well, we did two of them.
Two, I remember that, that's right.
Yeah, the first one, and we had lost Sorrel, so that sort of was a difficult thing. But it was fun just to get back together and you know, have our good old time together. But the second one we did was really difficult because Denver was ill and everybody knew it, and he had cancer and was getting towards the end, so that sort of weighed heavily over the whole thing for all of us. But it's a trite cliche, but when you do something and are associated with people for as long as we've been associated together, the cast of The Dukes of Hazzard and the folks who worked on it, all of us feel like we're an extended family. And so that was tough for us, losing those guys. And but then, you know, over the years, well, I think about 20 years ago, my wife Alma and I started doing this Cooters thing. I thought it'd be a good idea, and I'd been in Congress, I'd gone back and I'd done other movies, and I'd been in Los Angeles for a while doing that, and I just came back. I always wanted to live up here in the Blue Ridge Mountains, so we found a place here about 70 miles from Washington, D.C., and but you know, just sort of moved out here and joined the circus, sort of. And I had this idea for starting a little store called Cooters, which would be a Dukes of Hazzard, you know, shop with all my old costumes and the car sitting out front and pictures from the show. And it turned out to be a good hunch because it just took off like a rocket, just like the show had back in 79. And people started coming from all over creation, and, you know, because they love the Dukes of Hazzard. So we now have three of them, three stores like that, and planning another one, which is yet to be announced, not that far from Los Angeles, by the way. And we do these huge Dukes Fests, which have drawn one in Nashville a few years back, drew 90,000-plus people over a couple of days. So it's, and people come from all over the world. And the other thing is, the other character from the show we should mention is the General Lee, which the most popular car in the history of television, which people build. You know, there are over 1,000 replica General Lees in the United States alone, and they're also in other countries. So, you know, it is. I've seen 250 of them at one time, and people just come rolling in. So the Dukes of Hazzard is alive and well, Scott, I'm telling you.
I know it. I'm glad to hear it. Politics. How did politics happen after the end of the series?
I lived in Georgia during the years we filmed, and I commuted to Los Angeles. And Georgia politics, I'd always had an interest in politics and government. And I'd been in college in the 1960s when it was all about politics. And as a Southerner, I was involved in the civil rights movement. I saw how getting involved in things like that could make a big difference in people's lives. We actually changed the United States of America and made it more fair and equitable, I think. But so I was an old Southern Democrat, and the governor of Georgia, through friends, I went to a barbecue for him and gave a talk for him, and sure enough, I just had a knack for it. And I'd campaigned for Jimmy Carter in 1980, and when the Dukes was incredibly popular. He lost that race, but anyhow, I'd gotten a little taste of it, and a few years later, in 1986, just after the Dukes had ended, I was asked if I'd be interested in running for Congress. Now, I'm sort of the last person who would, because there's another part of my life which we haven't touched on. But in 1977, about a year before the Dukes of Hazzard began filming, I was nearly killed myself from alcoholism. As another part of my life, I'd been successful as an actor in those years, and I kept on working, but my own self-destructiveness and having that disease was taking me down. And so I got sober. But in all those years, I'd lived a really wild life, including a lot of fights and divorces and jailings and one thing or another. So, but, you know, almost 10 years had passed, and I was asked to run for Congress. And I said, well, you know, I really can't, I've got more bones in my closet than the Smithsonian Institute. The people say, you know, that could be an asset. You just tell the truth. You know, you're honest about that stuff and just get up and, you know, and the difference, you know, you had nothing but positive things and good things happen for 10 years now. So talk about that. And I did, and it was a race in 1986 against an incumbent who was thought to be unbeatable, and I almost won. And so I just kept on running, and 2 years later I won the seat. So it was kind of a pretty remarkable thing, from a low-bottom alcoholism to the halls of Congress, you know, just a decade or so later. And so that's the really remarkable thing about my life, other than this other stuff, was that from where I was in 1977 to going to Congress in 1988, it was just a miraculous thing, in my opinion.
In those days, in the 80s and 90s, when you were in Congress, What was it like?
Well, it was an interesting time. Not as, I think politics now, we're in a serious situation in this country. There seems to be no middle ground. There's no room for compromise. There's nobody sitting down and saying, how can we just find a common sense solution? There's just, politics are polarized now. It was to a certain extent then. But there was always comity, you know, C-O-M-I-T-Y. That just means people getting along, and there was comity there. Even though that the schisms were there, and there were, you know, partisan people on both sides, there were also a whole lot of us who would get together and play basketball two or three times a week, Republicans and Democrats, and make friends and respect each other. I don't see that now. In fact, I think that the Democratic Party has drifted far to the left and is being pulled that way by special interests, and the Republican Party has reacted and gone more to the right, and there's nobody representing the great center of America, you know, the great middle ground of compromise and common sense. So I don't know what the future holds, but...
Now, that was Ben Jones on this show in 2018. Now, remember, this is from 2018, because I want to play one more clip from that May 8th, 2018 interview, because the election of 2016 had happened between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and I asked him about that election, and I also asked him how he would like to be remembered. So here's Ben Jones on this show, May 2018.
As an independent who speaks his piece, did you have a favorite in 2016 in the presidential election?
Actually, I ended up, and my old Democratic pals look aghast at this, but with those choices, which I thought, you know, how in a country of 320, 30 million people can we come up with these two choices? I voted for Donald Trump. Because the attacks upon my culture that is are coming from the left, and the attacks on our show, and the attacks on my people, my grandparents, my family, attacks on the South, and this is real to us down here. And I've been spent my lifetime trying to bring people together, and these people are just merrily tearing things apart, taking down, you know, statues of revered Americans. Who were, you know, in their time, did exactly what they thought was right. This deserves another conversation. There's a reaction here, and it's an honest reaction, and it's not a mean-spirited reaction. It's a heartfelt reaction.
And nothing wrong with that. And 100 years from now, because I'm sure Dukes of Hazzard will still be running.
We'll still be here.
Yeah, still be, without question. How would you like them to look back on you?
That I was just part of a happy show, a good time. Our show makes people feel good. It brings families together. It makes little children smile. It brings tears to people. It means a lot to people. Our silly old crazy show, still going strong all over the world. And I think that, you know, just like I remember Gene Autry and Roy Rogers, they were good old boys.
Well, Ben, this was your first visit, but I would love to have those conversations on the Confederate flag and things being under attack, so I hope it's not your last visit, and I hope you come back often, because it's been a lot of fun today. You made
well,
me
Well, I feel
smile
the today. Same, Scott. Thank you so much. It was a great way to spend some time, and you asked great questions.
Well, thank you, and we'll be in touch.
Give me a holler.
You stay well. Bye-bye.
I'm down, and I'm gone. Thank you.
Ben Jones, very good.
Ben Jones from the Dukes of Hazzard, also congressman from Georgia, gone yesterday at the age of 84. And those clips were from an interview on this program, May 8th, 2018. Well, does anybody have anything to say about that? I thought that was very interesting. I thought he was a fascinating interview. We talked a lot about Dukes of Hazzard in that interview, but also his political leanings and how he got involved and so on and so forth. Phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Any thoughts you have this morning on the passing of Ben Jones at the age of 84? star of the Dukes of Hazzard. You know, you don't see Dukes of Hazzard too much on television anymore. And I think it does have to do with the Confederate flag being on top of the car, the General Lee. I don't know. I don't... Seems like a little bit of a trite thing, but maybe not for some people. And I thought it was very interesting that this Democrat, who had become an independent, voted for Donald Trump in 2016, but also was apparently not happy with either one of the candidates. 740-383-9944. Well, wonder how he would have felt today. Okay. So we've got that. We've got the story over in Beaver Creek, which is an interesting story, to say the least. Does anybody have any thoughts, any more thoughts on the interview with Mayor Don Adams from Beaver Creek, Ohio, from hour number one? Still find it interesting that the mayor of Beaver Creek is not willing to levy an opinion on this whole Beaver Creek situation as of yet. When everybody else is, including the governor. So I would have to think there is just more to that story that we don't know about yet. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but we'll have to see how that all goes. I'm not sure yet that is big business versus small business. That does happen, but I think, like the mayor of Beaver Creek, I would like to know a little bit more about that particular situation. Again, the phone lines are open here, 31 minutes past the hour, 740-383-9944. Now, tonight, there will be a full city council meeting, second floor of City Hall, 6:30 p.m., and I would imagine the big conversation will be the flock camera conversation as that continues to go on down the road. Tonight, that legislation will reach city council, and we will find out what happens with it. Will people try to amend it? Will council vote on it? Will they let it go the three readings? I don't know. There is an emergency clause on this legislation, so it will be interesting to see how it all turns out. Now, I have said this before, and I'll say it again. I believe there are probably a guaranteed 2 votes against the flock cameras, maybe 3. But I don't know if there are 5 votes to get rid of them when you look at the composition of that council. Now, what is probably likely to happen is that people will want to amend that legislation, and we'll see if the votes are there to amend the legislation so it's not totally getting rid of the flock cameras, but doing something, maybe meeting people halfway. And then I think you'll pick up more votes along the way if you amend the legislation. Leaving it the way it is to totally get rid of the flock cameras and taking a vote on that, I'm not sure the votes are there for that. But the votes might be there for an amended legislation. So here we are. And if anybody's got anything more to say about that, they can give us a buzz. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. But you know what's interesting? What I find interesting and have found interesting about this flock camera conversation that we've been having for weeks now on this program is that people are so definitive about it. You know, people have very strong feelings about this particular issue. And I also find it interesting that the first time it was brought up at City Council, the room was standing room only. Then, when the panel was actually there last week, not quite standing room only. Maybe the room was 75% full. Then we come to tonight. So how full will the room be tonight? You know, do people really follow the legislative process? You know, how long does that go on? How long do people stick in the fight to get rid of something or to keep something that they feel should be gotten rid of or they feel should be kept? I don't know. I think it's a very interesting process. It's a very interesting process to watch play out. And if there's not a whole lot of blowback from the public and the room is not filled, I think that will also have some impact on tonight's legislation. Now, another question is, will the sheriff be there tonight? Will the prosecutor be there tonight? I would imagine the police chief would be there. I don't know why he wouldn't. So these are all big questions. Does anybody have anything to say? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. At this point, that's pretty much what I have on the city council meeting tonight. Other than that, it doesn't sound like any big, huge legislation. We've done the death of Ben Jones at the age of 84 yesterday, star of the Dukes of Hazzard for so many years. We've talked about the interview that I did on Friday night with Mayor Don Adams of Beaver Creek. I think that's an interesting story. It's I don't know that it's all that an impactful story, but it certainly is an interesting story. You've got to say that. So there's the three subjects that we've covered this morning. And if somebody has something they'd like to say, we've got about 24 minutes left in the program. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Now, let's see. Are there any good developments going on in Marion right now? You know, the Culvers out in front of Meyer, that seems to be coming along. The building looks to be up. Doesn't look like it's too far from being finished. Maybe a month or so, somewhere in that nature. I think people will be excited for that. You know, we've got this problem in Marion. When a new business opens up, the business gets overwhelmed the first week or so that they're open. And people go and they get bad service because the business is not expecting to be that busy. And then people never go back. Now, do you think Culver's has prepared for this? Do you think they're ready for the big rush of business that they're going to get in week number one when they open? I don't know. Let's hope so, because that seems to kill a lot of businesses here in town. Then you've got the cursed building just up the road, which was once White Castle. Then it became Popeye's Chicken. Then it became, what was it, O'Charley's? That building cannot keep a business to save anybody's life. That I don't know. There has to be some kind of curse on that building. Because it's located in exactly the right place, but no business can stay in there. I don't know what happened. I don't know if there was some hex put on that building. Why do you feel no business survives in that building? I mean, people of Marion wanted a White Castle for I don't know how long. Failed. Then we got Popeye's Chicken, and people seem to like Popeye's Chicken. That failed. Then we got O'Charley's, and people talked about their subs and so on and so forth. That didn't last. And you know something else? I don't think we've ever talked about it on this show, but on Friday, I went to El Campesino, which is back open on Route 95. It was closed for a while because of the fire that had happened at Penn Station, which had bled over into El Campesino on Route 95. Now, El Campesino is opened again. Good tacos, as always, good soft tacos. But Penn Station is not open. Now, is Penn Station just gone at this particular point? Has anybody heard what's going to happen with that? I mean, it still looks in bad shape in there, and it doesn't look like anybody's done any kind of work in the Penn Station. I thought that Penn Station was doing fairly well in Marion. I had went there a few times. They had very good French fries in a cup. They had very good subs. I thought it was a good place. But has anybody heard of them trying to refurbish their location after the fire that did so much damage there. If anybody has any information on Penn Station, give me a buzz, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Then we've got the Starbucks that's allegedly going to open, freestanding Starbucks out here on Delaware Avenue. Now, I have not seen any construction yet, but I do have to say, I don't go up and down Delaware Avenue a whole lot, so there could be construction. But the last time I went up and down Delaware Avenue, there was not any construction. It looked like the ground had been, the old parking lot had been sort of heaved up, but and it's just kind of a dirt area right now. But I don't know why it's taking so long to put the Starbucks in. Let's see, what else do you have going on? Well, you've got the Duke Station out on 95. It's what's the street it's on? Well, it's 95 and what's the side street? The Jamesway. At the corner of 95 and Jamesway. Well, they're redoing the pumps there for whatever reason. And I'll tell you who's the big beneficiary of that Duke Station redoing the pumps. That is Meijer, just half a mile up the road, because the Meijer gas station has been incredibly busy ever since Duke started to redo their pumps on Route 95. Has anybody noticed that? How busy Meijer gas station has been the last few weeks since the Duke station started to redo their pumps there on 95? Apparently nobody wants to drive down to the other end of 95 to go to the BP. They just all go to Meijer, which I guess is closer, so it makes sense. I'm not sure why they're redoing the pumps. Maybe they're just old. Who knows? And then we had talk of Kroger on Route 95 opening up a fuel center. You know, the word we got on that was construction was supposed to start in the summer, and it was supposed to be open sometime in the fall. Well, it doesn't look like that's happening at this point. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Doing okay.
Hey, I just want to express my appreciation to you again for the Bailey Zimmerman tickets last Friday. I mean, the concert was awesome. I've heard his. I was kind of like you. I was well aware of his music, wasn't aware of him. Somebody had said to me, "Oh, you know, Bailey Zimmerman." I thought it was a female. So, I mean, it was an awesome concert. It was an awesome time. I appreciate you, and I appreciate how you serve your community. I appreciate your heart, your accountability, and the open discussion that you foster on your show. So I just wanted to put that out there for you, buddy.
Well, hey, I appreciate it. I'm glad you had a good time.
Hey, on the flock camera stuff and all of that, I just want to encourage everybody to show up tonight. Show up, speak up, and then shut up. You know, let's do our part. I'm all about passion. Sometimes I ramble on, and sometimes other people ramble on. Sometimes they get their passion a little out of control. I would encourage everybody to, you know, speak up, show up, speak up, and then shut up and listen to the answers. Again, if Ray Grogan wants to speak man-to-man, face-to-face, talk right, I'll happily do that. I'll happily do that there, on your show, whatever. I wouldn't expect you take any disrespect, and I certainly won't take any disrespect. I've posted on the on my page all of the public information from all of our public servants. So I would encourage everybody in Marion to contact their council people, their public servants. They want to hear from you. That's their job, is to listen to you and represent you. I would encourage you, there's no one that more loves to hear from those people than Danny Clark. 740-360-7078. give him a call. Let him know how you feel. You know, who is the boss of the people? Who is city council's boss? And I think they've forgotten that, and I think we really need to remind them. So.
No, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people showing up would be very helpful to the cause if that is what people want done. If they want the flock cameras to come down, I think that certainly couldn't hurt.
Sure, and I think this is a starting point. This is a starting point for movement of the people, movement of the people recognizing who's really in charge. You know, Dan Clark set up there one day that, you know, they run this show. No, they don't. They were hired by the people to represent the people. And if they don't represent the people are going to say bye, Felicia.
Hey, so, I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Have a great day, buddy.
Bye-bye. All right, phone lines are open. We've got about 5 minutes left in the broadcast. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Well, I certainly appreciate thank you for the Bailey Zimmerman tickets. It's fun to give away the Ohio State Fair tickets. I still am shocked by the Bailey Zimmerman outpouring, but I'm glad people enjoyed it. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, let's talk clock for a second. Did you hear what happened in Milwaukee?
No, I did not.
There was a woman it wasn't in Milwaukee. It was a little town outside of Milwaukee. The hit came out of Milwaukee, the license plate hit. Her car was allegedly used, it was wanted, in connection with a homicide out of Milwaukee. And she was stopped. It was incorrect, okay? The flag, at one point in time, I think this vehicle was flagged or it was a misread or something like that, but it had been cleared and it had been determined. It didn't need to be on the list anymore, but yet it was still on the list. So she is stopped in the middle of I-91, I believe it is, a four-lane highway, full-on felony stuff, dug out of her car at gunpoint, handcuffed, until it was cleared up and they got a hold of Milwaukee and said, nope, we don't actually need that vehicle anymore. I mean, this went on for quite some time. We don't need that vehicle and we don't need that person. Now we're all thinking, okay, mistakes are made and whatever else. The really screwed up part is it's the second time that it had happened that week. The second time she was stopped at gunpoint. And when the first time when they found out, oh, this is an error, this should have never happened and she shouldn't be on this list, no one bothered taking her off the list to the point that she stopped in the middle of a highway the next time at gunpoint. Traffic was shut down. I mean, it was a hot, hot, hot mess. Out in Wisconsin because of an erroneous flock camera hit twice in 1 week, that poor woman was held at gunpoint. Twice.
Well,
now, that we shouldn't even be willing to take the risk that that would happen to another one of our fellow citizens.
Well, see, now this is an interesting thing, though, because obviously, if that type of thing was going on in Marion, we would hear about it, and I think it would be hard to keep something like that a secret. Obviously,
okay,
because...
But everybody's going to say, okay, well, it didn't happen in Marion. It happened in some places like Belfer, Wisconsin, or something like that. And, of course, the police chief is coming out and saying, oh, my guys just did what they were supposed to do. They did what they were supposed to do with the information that they had. Okay, so now they're even excusing it. They're not even apologizing to the women. They're just saying, oh, yeah, well, that's what we were supposed to do. That's what we do when we get that information. It doesn't matter, you know, that it happened twice to her in 1 week and nobody bothered correcting it the first time. This woman actually said that she was afraid if she grabbed her phone to make a phone call while they were stopping her that she would have been shot.
Right.
So
well,
that's a misread on a flock camera.
Right.
Well, actually, it's a misread by the human using the flock camera.
Right. But I think here's the problem, and thank God it's never happened this way, but we are a very reactionary society to what's going on in other communities, and I think it is important to realize what has gone on in our community. I mean, we've got 5 school districts in this community. Now, every time there is a school shooting, people around here panic. Now, there hasn't been a school shooting here, but because it happened somewhere else, we panic, and we put in precautions.
But don't you think those towns where this, like Uvalde, Texas, do you think they ever thought we're going to have a mass shooting at an elementary school and the police are going to stand outside for an hour while it goes on?
No,
do you think they thought that when all the other school shootings are happening?
No, and that's my point. is that I think it is a good thing that people realize these things go on in the world, so we might need to step up our security. We might need to step up what we're doing. We might need to be a little more aware in case this ever did happen in our community. And I think that's the story behind the flock cameras in a lot of way. Yes, bad things do happen, and yes, have bomb threats been called into schools that were not true? They happen all the time, and that has happened in Marion. But you certainly do what you have to do to take those seriously, because that's a serious thing to do.
Right, and we could say, well, they've never happened in Marion, so why would we even bother thinking that the bomb threat could, or someone would actually bomb a school here? No one's ever done it before.
Right, but I don't think we think that. But I don't think we think that way.
No, right? Because it has to do with children.
Right, and I think that's what the thinking is behind the flock camera idea, is that yes, mistakes have been made in other places, and yes, things have not been handled properly. We see those on the news every night. You know, they come out of Franklin County. But why haven't we seen them in Marion? And if we did, well, then there's a big story there.
I agree with you, but we shouldn't wait for something to happen to us. And so, remember, Scott, we're going back to being proactive. And I know that's an issue for us in this town. But even as Americans, you know, the sheriff, well, this doesn't violate your rights. Okay, well, we think it does. And just because you say it doesn't, and as we said, at this point in time, the court doesn't agree, that doesn't mean that we aren't allowed to fight for it. And this is another thing that happened over the weekend that I thought was incredibly strange, and it has to do with children, so I was really surprised about this one. Delaware has a first Friday, like we have a third Thursday.
Yes,
and
yes.
On the front page of their city Facebook page, they put a picture of the police. They were supposed to be having this safety, I can't remember what it was. Oh, safety on Sandusky, because it's on Sandusky Avenue. And the picture that they chose, of all the hundreds of pictures, I'm sure, that were taken that day, was a kid holding a canister, riot gun canister, with his finger on the trigger and pointed at someone else. Now, I redacted the picture and took the kid's face off of it, but he's sucking on a lollipop, just smiling big as can be. The cops are standing around smiling big as can be. We got a kid with a weapon, with his finger on the trigger, pointed at somebody. And I posted that, and people were like, oh, you just must not be any fun. Why don't you want the kids to have fun? Why do you, blah, blah, blah. Okay, the number one cause of death amongst children age 1 through 17, firearm-related death.
Right.
Whether they accidentally shoot themselves, whether it's school shooting, hunting, whatever, kids die from guns more than they die from car accidents. We've got the police standing there smiling while the kids got it. I mean, that's the number one thing they teach you in gun safety. Don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to pull it, and don't ever point the thing at anybody. And here we have the police officers doing that. And now these are the same people that we're just supposed to trust, that they know what's best for us, and they're doing their best to keep us safe. But people are really arguing that that kid is just wanting to have fun, and he's just wanting to have a good time. And, you know, how dare I say anything about a kid standing with their finger on... Now, it was a canister. They're like, that's not a gun. It's on a... Okay, do you think when little Billy gets underneath Grandpa's bed and finds his loaded shotgun that he's going to know that that's not the same canister weapon that the police showed him at Sandusky Street?
But see, that's where I think this flock camera thing is a multifaceted case. Because I think that is one of the reasons that people feel that we do need something like that, because of events like you're just speaking about, where we want to be proactive. I understand there's an argument for being proactive to get rid of the flock cameras so nobody gets pulled over when they shouldn't be pulled over. But I think people would rather see people pulled over when they shouldn't be pulled over by police officers.
At gunpoint? I would not.
Well,
I don't want anyone... Can you imagine how terrifying it would be to be stopped in the middle of a highway and an entire SWAT team pull you out of
yes,
your vehicle and done nothing wrong?
And I don't think that it's right to do that. But I'm saying, versus...
So we should risk that woman twice in 1 week. We should be willing to risk her right because... What?
Somebody might take a gun from under their grandfather's bed and go shoot their friends.
Well, then maybe the police shouldn't have put the weapon in his hand to begin with and showed little Billy how easy it is to line one up. And then maybe Grandpa should keep his stuff locked up and out of the way so Billy can't get to the gun.
Right, but do we fight for those protections? No, we fight to keep that as free as we can, and we use the Constitution as a reason to do so.
Scott, I have a picture. People kept saying, oh, I was just anti-gun and this and that and the other. I have a picture of my son. It's actually a video. I have a picture of my son, though, that I posted. He's at a firing range, Delaware firing range, Delaware State Park. He has a Barrett 50 caliber machine gun. If anybody knows guns, they know what I'm talking about. It is a weapon of war. I mean, you don't go out hunting with it. Someone we know owns one. My son wanted to go shoot it. It is literally what they strap on the back of a Humvee and shoot during war, okay? My son went to the rifle range. They didn't put his safety glasses on him, but he went to the rifle range. He wore his earmuffs. He handled the gun appropriately and shot a 50 caliber rifle, a machine of war, safely. No one's dead. He knows what he's doing. My son is an excellent shot. My father-in-law was a fire arms dealer, class 3, until Bill Clinton came into office. My family had some rifles from the 1890s. We've got all sorts of things. We are not anti-gun.
No.
We are pro-gun safety.
No, and I don't think most people are anti-gun who will bring up the argument that we have no gun laws because people will use the Second Amendment as a reason.
Well, I think there are some gun law, common sense gun reform that even I, as a firm believer in the Second Amendment, could see being reasonable. But then it also goes back to, you can't legislate the hearts of man, Scott. If we want to kill people, we're going to figure out a way to do it.
Well, and again, I think it goes back to the reasoning of why we feel, with police forces being cut back and technology becoming so sophisticated for criminals, that we need to get sophisticated ourselves with law enforcement. I do understand the argument that law enforcement is making.
AI and human beings, what could go wrong when we combine them together?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, but you hear FBI statistics, and crime is actually on the decrease. So do we really need more intrusive measures? And it has been for quite some time. Do we really need more intrusive measures of keeping us safe when we're not really maybe as unsafe as they're letting us to believe?
Well, see, here's the problem. The thing you just did with gun control is what people are doing with flock cameras, but in the opposite direction. You know, if you say, you know, I don't like that a child has a gun at a First Friday in Delaware, you're immediately anti-guns. But if you even bring up a point as to why maybe flock cameras are wanting to be used by the police department, you're immediately anti-flock camera. So, you know, I think these absolutes...
I can find a happy medium with flock, and I think I've already said it. I think that, you know, the entrances and exits, I don't think it's an all bad idea. I think when we've got 20 cameras that are across, some of them are across the street from each other, it seems a little bit more than about safety. It seems more like surveillance.
Well,
put them on
309,
put them on 23, put them on 95, put them on 223, 529, whatever one I'm missing.
And maybe that is the compromise. I imagine there's going to be amendments to this legislation.
I was talking to someone over the weekend about this. And I want to ask the numbers again, but I think I even mentioned it to you. We were talking about the reasons that they accessed the system and they read them to us. And I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I swear they said, if it was from like 1 month to a month or two later, it had like tripled. The usage had tripled.
Yeah, they did.
So that piqued my interest. And then I'm pretty sure Mr. Kreider said that like over 100 searches for missing vehicles. Does that sound right?
I don't remember.
Sure.
It could have been.
I want to verify those numbers because I asked, why are we using them for moving violations? And they said, we're not. It's stolen or missing vehicles. And I didn't think to put two and two together then because do we really have over 100 stolen or missing vehicle calls in Marion a month, or are they just using it as a generic catch-all to flock us?
Well, I don't know. Doesn't somebody have to report something and they have to have a number to put it in? You know,
I don't know.
That's
can they make up these case numbers? I mean, who's auditing that? And you know what? You can make up a call number because a call number never translates into a case number. And so for us to audit them, I mean, we would have to do a lot of working backwards. We would have to get that. We would have to see, okay, what was the actual call for service? And then we would need to start working back. And what I'm thinking is we might find some Marmot calls in there.
Well, in the 30 seconds we have left here, then a good question tonight would be, why was there such an increase in calls in the last month?
I'm going to ask that.
There you go. Well, that's tonight at 6:30.
And I'll just stand there and stare until they answer, Spears.
Well, don't walk away. And if you,
I'm not going to.
After a few seconds, say, is there an answer? There you go.
If I have to sit down, crisscross applesauce, I'm not leaving until they give an answer.
There you go. Thank you.
Bye, Scott.
All right, we're out of time for this day. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Which is above you. Yeah. All you'd have to do is raise your hands and energize our transmitter.
To formerly of WNCI, Weasel Boy, is that true?